Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show, a production of Aim for Truth and Americans for Innovation. My name is Doug. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Doug. How are you? Nice to see you.
Well, I'm a
little... Look like you're a cowboy. You've got that lanyard.
I got the bolo. As a matter of fact, one of our followers wanted me to get a close-up of the bolo because they liked it so much. But really, today's show is embarrassing for me because I have a Bachelor of Arts in History with a focus in British history, and Mike and the miners. By the way, the miners, they know how to distinguish between gold and iron pyrite. You can't fool them. They know fool's gold. So I was taught the fool's gold version of British history, which I'm embarrassed to say I actually believed, but then later I studied more. But now, Mike and the miners, every time I talk to you and the people you coordinate, you embarrass me because you bring out the obfuscated history of the Brits, which literally are still the control mechanisms of our own time. So today we're going to be talking about more absolutely shocking revelations if you've studied history, because you will not have heard of the Institute for Pacific Relations. You will not have heard of the Washington Conversations for International Peace and Security Organization, which are in fact the controlling factors for Russian-Chinese communism and the creation of the United Nations. So get ready. Hang on to your hat. Welcome to the show, Mike.
It's great to be here. Add Bolshevism to that list.
And yes, I kind of glump those two together. So I'm going to give a brief overview of to make it sound like I know a bit of history, which in fact I've had to be educated as we've been doing these last probably 20, 25 podcasts. And today we decided to do it as a video so that people can actually see that there's just two people here. But the person not here, Betsy Ross, my beautiful wife, Tyla Gabriel, is in fact
there
she is. She's the puppet master pulling the strings. We are just simply, you know, we are the sock puppets and she is the hand. So I'm going to give you a very quick overview of what we're going to talk about today to make sure that you're caught up with what used to be considered a conspiracy theory. And if you go to Carol Quigley and read the Anglo-American Establishment or Tragedy and Hope or any of the people who acted, Eustace Mullins, any of them who acted like they went outside of the standard propaganda, which is called British history of the world, you won't see these things mentioned. You will not find this information. And when Mike and the miners get into an archive, they pull out things that no historian has ever seen before. And then they give you the literal, indictable evidence to demonstrate that what they're saying is true. So here's how it goes.
By the way, Douglas.
Yes.
We were just digging into Quigley's references before coming on the air. And I can tell you in your summary, one of the interesting aspects is the IPR, this Institute for Pacific Relations, was mentioned by Quigley numerous times. But in the process of mentioning it, what he successfully did was he put it in a what I call a word salad, in that he just named all kinds of international institutes and used affairs and public relations, blah, blah, blah. So what he did, in effect, was bury a reference to what we're going to talk about in a word salad, so you really can't figure out which is driving it, what is driving it.
I just got to rereading quickly, and I did not notice the IPR mentioned. So, yes, it was so obscurely referenced in there that you wouldn't have noticed it. You would have thought it was just a little nothing. No, it is the key factor. And the two I just mentioned at the front of this broadcast are literally the linchpins for the way that global hegemony is masterminded out of Britain. So here's just a quick reference to a bit of a timeline that shows you some of the things that have been revealed through Mike and the Miners and the staff writers for Americans for Innovation, the Americans Intelligence Media Conclave, and the groups that we work with, Betsy and her team, have all brought these things forward. And putting together the research of all these different groups, we now know that Cecil Rhodes created the Round Table, which he called the Society of the Elect. Around them was a group called the Society of Helpers. That was the beginning of basically imperialistic hegemony that was outside of the British government, yet it eventually ended up controlling 100% the British government. And of course, Cecil Rhodes died in 1902, and W.T. Stead and Alfred Milner continued. Milner picked up where Rhodes left off, fleecing the Transvaal in South Africa and the South African company, basically, which used
British South Africa company.
The British South Africa company, which used previously owned British East India Company land. And then basically the Transvaal was the major producer for gold and later diamonds. And then later throughout all of Africa, what became De Beers Diamond Corporation, which still to this very day controls the diamond markets of the world and fools us to tell us that there are very few diamonds in the world. And that's the reason they charge so much money for it.
Let me add, the other thing that's usually not talked about when we talk about the Transvaal is rare earth minerals, which figure tremendously into current history because so many of those minerals are used in development of high technology. And so that was another, I mean, when you look at the story of Rwanda, what you're going to find is the CIA grabbing all of the rare earth mineral mining rights for the South Congo and Rwanda.
Yes, and Rhodes had the idea of creating the Rhodes Scholarship. He wrote a number of wills. W.T. Stead, who was basically one of the top propagandists and journalists of his time, carried out the administration of those wills at first, but later...
Can I interrupt? He is known as the father of modern-day tabloid journalism.
Yes, he's basically a spiritualist, psychic, crazy man who had these ideas and was able to promulgate them in the newspapers of the time so that they would be considered okay. In other words, it's basically spin. It's caricatures of what Cecil Rhodes really wanted, which was depopulation and the control of the world by a small group of billionaires. As a matter of fact, I like to call Cecil Rhodes Society of the Elect three Rothschilds, a Carnegie, and a mad eugenicist hegemonist. So in other words, these people really wanted to annihilate everyone except the elite themselves. And they were the richest people of the time. And they met in a round table group conversation, which later was ran by Alfred Milner, his top student, who then eventually for many, many years controlled British opinion, the British Parliament, controlled the Boer War in South Africa, and controlled the politics of international colonialism, as it were. So he created what was called the Milner Roundtable, but it has many other names. Then everyone knows this because this is the standard route of the conspiracy theorists who try to tell us why the Council on Foreign Relations controls American foreign policy, which of course it does. So Milner's kindergarten became a set of round tables in many different countries that to this very day still controls those countries. Then the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which only today the miners once again embarrass me being a historian and pointed out, well, hello, it's the same thing as Chatham House because they met at Chatham House. And don't confuse that. I always thought Chatham House came first, but that's not true. They're one and the same, and that was proved by recent research done by the miners. Then in 1919, the American Roundtable was created in America, the Council on Foreign Relations, which at this point still controls all of our foreign policy, which basically believes in a clash of nations and that there has to be one supernation that controls them all. They tried to convince us, the Brits, that America was that supernation, and then Henry Kissinger tried to convince us that China was taking over for that. That is complete nonsense. Then came the inquiry, which was Colonel House, who controlled Woodrow Wilson, created the inquiry, which basically then controlled American policy, got us into World War One,
which was basically run by J.P. Morgan and the Rothschilds. We need to say that.
And his lawyers. The lawyers were the number one people on the inquiry. And during the Treaty of Versailles, all kinds of things went down in backroom deals. including the creation of the intent to make the Israel, the nation of Israel, modern nation of Israel. So the inquiry was the secret group of basically the lawyers of the richest people in America. Again, these are the robber barons of America, the billionaires, which would be billionaires in our time, Rockefeller, Rothschild, Morgan. Remember J.P. Morgan was an agent of the Rothschilds. Kuhn and Loeb, Adam Schiff, all these different bankers who, in fact, through what we talked about in our last podcast, the International American Alliance, was the creator of Bolshevism and the funder of Russian communism and Bolshevism. Then in 1920, the League of Nations was created, and the Americans, because you have shown that through your multiple podcasts and research that you put up on Americans for Innovation with the staff writers there, that the League of Nations was not supported by the Americans, even the American politicians, who still at that time were a tiny bit honest. And so we have in the record, the congressional record, the fact that they said they didn't want to join in World War I, which is a false flag setup of Britain setting up Germany. And remember, the Brits are Germans. We'll get to that in a minute. Then in 1920, the League of Nations was created, but it was a massive failure because people understood that it was a British-controlled attempt to take over the world.
Yes, there was that awareness very prominently in Congress at the time. So we had some good guys in Congress who were pushing back on this. So that's why they haven't been more successful, I think, more quickly.
Thorkelson, you brought out his testimony before the Congress, as well as new testimony that is in your new article, that demonstrates that they knew all along that the Brits had only one thing on their mind, and that was to make America back into their vassal, into a British dominion that they would be in control of. And folks, sorry, we've proven through Serco, the Crown agents, all these different groups, still to this very day, the Brits control America. Then the key factor that I certainly didn't know, I'd seen and read over reference to the Institute for Pacific Relations, was created in 1925 of Pacific Relations.
Institute of Pacific Relations.
You see, Mike and the miners, they don't mince words. They want to make sure that they get it exactly right. So the Institute of Pacific Relations was one of the most nefarious organizations ever. And I'm talking here the political. In a second, I'm going to talk about the social timeline here. Then in 1944, something I had never heard of, the Dumbarton Oaks Conference, which was also called the Washington Conversations on International Peace and Security Organization.
Doesn't that feel warm and fuzzy?
And it's so easy to say. Yeah. I don't know why people, you know, I said, look, I'm going to shorten it to IPSO. And then it was ran by, we have now found the secret chief, one of the hidden secret chiefs. We have called out Lord Mark Malik Brown, Jeffrey Patty, and many Privy Council members serving the Queen and the monarchy of Britain. But now, Iveson McAdam. Did I say his name right?
Yeah.
I never even heard of him.
McAdam, like the inventor of the asphalt road. McAdam.
It's a one road, one belt that leads directly to the Queen, because
correct.
This Dumbarton Oaks Conference, you can find references to it in places, but you will not understand it because it says it's a Washington conversation held at Georgetown. Oh, it was just a conversation, but then so were all Chatham House meetings. Chatham House rule, I'm talking to one of the miners, not rules with an S, but the Chatham House rule is, you cannot, first off, there's no agenda, nothing written, you don't know who is invited, and you cannot talk about what was discussed during a Chatham House meeting. That's the Chatham House rule.
And there are no notes.
And no notes. That's the Royal Institute of International Affairs that controls all British foreign policy. And that was in 1944. And you think, okay, well, what did they do? Well, Mike is going to tell you what the miners have uncovered about them in a minute. Also in 1944 was the Bretton Woods meetings, and they sent their top economist, John Maynard Keynes, who was putting forth the idea of one world currency called a bancor.
British, by the way.
of course, British, and of course the Bancor is from the Jewish Venetian family Banco, which is where we get the name bank. So we have revealed the Venetian banking cabal and their rules that they followed, which are the same exact rules followed by these organizations. And at Bretton Woods was our American representative, Harry Dexter White, who was in fact a known communist and later prosecuted for being so, who sold out America to the communists. Because 1 year later, when the United Nations was created, the World Bank was created, the International Monetary Fund was created, the World Trade Organization was created, and it was all based upon special drawing rights through the International Monetary Fund, which they did not allow, the Brits and the Americans did not allow the Russians and the Chinese to partake in what was then made the world currency, special drawing rights of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. And that, then later, I didn't go into this in my timeline, but the Marshall Plan then put upon the Germans such a burden economically that they had to manage that through international banks. So the International Bank, the International Bank for Settlements. No.
Bank of Settlements.
Thank you. The Bank for International Settlement was now the most corrupt bank in the world. It controls all the derivative betting. It controls all the international betting. And there is more money being backed up by the Bank for International Settlement than there is money in the world in all economies put together. So we have bankers making bets based upon what was the Marshall Plan, having to have an international bank control world economy. And then, of course, the United Nations is nothing more than a front for British-created communism. I mean, imagine that the Russians and the communists in China and the Bolsheviks and the Russian, later the Russian communists, the Brits and Americans, they gave veto power to their enemies in the United Nations because the League of Nations failed.
Quote, enemies.
Yes, quote, enemies, exactly. Because
they were their creations.
The British, we funded Lenin and Trotsky, and the Brits helped create Marxism. So Marx and Engels did some of their principal writing in London, all housed and directed by the puppet master, Philip
Wilson.
Mm-hmm. That's hard to say. Philip Whitwell Wilson. So you get to see there the political stream. But the propaganda stream was absolutely nefarious. And one would say in this next timeline, people pull their hair out and run away screaming and call us names when they get to see the evidence, the absolute evidence that this was the propaganda of these British, now I call them globalist, imperialist hegemonists. They want to basically depopulate the world and control the world through the United Nations, which has always been controlled by the Brits from the beginning. So everyone's heard of Jeremy Bentham. He's the one who created welfareism and the social gospel. And so he, in the early 1800s, created these organizations, which were later bastardized into John Ruskin's form of the settlement movement, which was in the early 1900s. And so John Ruskin then seemed to have inspired many people, and all of this really goes back to Oxford and Balliol College and All Souls College, which are colleges inside of Oxford, which literally to this very day is the British imperialist family dynasties and lineages that inbreed with each other through interlocking directorships and now what I call interlocking bedroom directorships. Yeah. So basically, John Ruskin then put out these concepts of the settlement program. And then in 1844, the YMCA was founded by
Can I just stop you there? Because mm-hmm. we often hear that summary, but I think it's pretty simple to understand what he's proposing. He's proposing that people live in a commune, literally, and that the commune has a leader, and that was him in his concept. And then the leader would be a benevolent leader that would make sure that all the members of the commune had all their needs taken care of. And that was basically the concept.
It's an attempt at true Christian communism using the false flag of Christianity, which the YMCA, you're not going to believe that in 1844, when the YMCA was created by it's Sir George Williams, right? He was a sir. Now,
yeah, he not when he created it, but he became a sir later.
I hate all those names, lords, sirs, and then the fact that the Brits hide behind. For instance, when I was talking about the three Rothschilds, we're talking about N.M. Rothschild. We're talking about Lord Purbright, Lord
Henry de Worms. Henry de Worms.
Yes, and Lord Rosebery.
Right.
And later Lord Lothian and Lord Esher and Lord Astor. All these lords are simply hiding, in many cases, their real name and who they really are.
Right.
And that's the obfuscation that is literally an institutionalized form of British politics. Basically, as my good friend John Barnwell always says, the Brits run everything by committees. The only problem is only one person knows who's on the committee, so they can invite them there, and they must take an oath of secrecy not to tell anyone who's on the committee, and then they don't know that other committees exist. So right. That I'll go over in just a second. So the YMCA, whether people know it or not, whether they like it or not, was used as an infiltration tool throughout the world to basically control British international imperialist intents, right. And basically was literally the father of Mao Zedong's Russian-Soviet inspired communism. And to this very day, you can still see that the fake Christian false flag that went into China was to create a proletariat that would be able to overthrow those in power, the nationalists who were in power. And that happened in, of course, Russia through the Bolsheviks, through American money and British influence, and also British money, which basically they were the creators of Bolshevism. They were creators of Chinese communism. And then came in 1865, the Salvation Army. Now that is again a false flag of Christianity, which has done more to continue slavery than anyone could possibly imagine.
And recruit for the industrial class by their own documents.
Yes, and in 1880, the settlement movement got developed and was then promulgated throughout the world. And then the Americans who brought the Salvation Army in a very strong way, the only probably Christian element that you can really find there, because when you say Salvation Army and YMCA, you don't ever see anybody hardly at all being converted to Christianity. There's no evangelism involved in these organizations. They were part of the settlement movement. And they were part of the social gospel that was twisted right. up and turned into an imperialistic colonialism later simply called the settlement movement. Now, when I mentioned John Maynard Keynes and wanting an international currency through the United Nations, World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, and called it the Bancor, well, we have to go back a long ways, and sometimes people get a little perturbed, I should say, because we keep going back into history. But in every single podcast, we bring it into modern times to show that these streams of history are not only so propagandized, they're obfuscated, but they're still happening today, and they aren't even noticed by historians, by politicians, who in fact are their puppets. So to begin with, when the First Crusade was started, it was financed not by the Catholic Church, it was financed by Venice, who provided the ships to take the Crusaders to the Holy Land. And it was founded in Venice, the first banks called from the Banco family, as I mentioned before. So what happened? They created a system where there was one person in charge, and then only three people around that one person could find out really what was going on. And they had the power of life and death over people. So if you owed the Banco family money, they could literally kill you, just like what the Venetian Doge could do. The Venetians took up this system. It was taken up in Florence and many cities throughout Italy. Because why? The Jews weren't constricted where they weren't contained by the rules of the Catholics at the time, which said they could not loan money with interest. In other words, what's called usury. So the Banco family, they didn't invent usury, but they basically institutionalized it for the Crusades. And then this was taken up later by Vikings, who were called Lombards, came down into Venice, carried it back to Europe through Switzerland and into Germany, into Holland, and later into Britain. But the Lombards ended up basically being the House of Savoy, which we've talked a lot about, but they ended up being the Normans in Normandy. And the Normans, through William the Conqueror in 1066, went to Britain and beat up on the Anglo-Saxons and tried to obfuscate again, tried to hide the reality that they weren't British at all. And now what do we have? We have in Britain, a fake monarchy called the House of Windsor, which has nothing to do with the House of Windsor, who is actually the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, which is a German lineage. So you have German rulers in Britain parading as if they are Anglo-Saxons, or in most cases just Anglos, and creating the Anglo-American alliance, when in fact they aren't Anglo, they aren't Saxon, they're not even Norman, they are Germans. And so when the First World War started, that was a British German people in Britain developing fascism, which then created a false flag in Germany twice to create World War I and World War II. And the propaganda was so profound that they realized they could do this throughout the world. They tried it with the League of Nations. It failed. They tried it, and it did not fail. It succeeded with the United Nations. So we have then them trying to start the International Monetary Fund, the Brits, through John Maynard Keynes, the Bancor, one world currency. Well, right now, we are still under one world currency politically, internationally, through the International Monetary Fund special drawing rights. So this is still happening today, and that's the reason that a populist nationalist, Donald Trump, said, I'm taking away 50% of the funding of everything in the United Nations, because he knew what it was. Unfortunately, he did not simply pull us out of the United Nations, because if he would have, that would have upset the apple cart, because the World Health Organization tells the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institute for Health when a pandemic is called. We are now in World War III, created by the Brits, through the United Nations and the World Health Organization, declaring a false pandemic, which we as Americans had to give up our constitutional rights to follow the World Health Organization's lead, because we have built it into our pandemic laws, started in 2006 and then voted on six times, almost unanimously in the House and Senate, to reinstitute and to basically broaden the powers of the pandemic laws, or preparedness laws, as they're called, in America. So the president is not in control of this pandemic. It is controlled by the United Nations, and we aren't in control of our elections because Lord Mark Malik Brown, a member of the British monarchy's Privy Council and even the secret council inside of the Privy Council, invented OPTEC in Venezuela and controls most of the election devices through the software that run them throughout the whole world.
Well, you were asking, Douglas, how we discovered the Institute for Public or Institute for Pacific Relations. And as you recall, two or three posts ago, we followed the thread of how Boris Johnson seemed to never or didn't remember that his great-great-grandfather was the founder of the YMCA. So one thing led to another, and I had recalled that when I was in a gospel group, we traveled in Asia and we stayed in a YMCA in Hong Kong. And the British influence in China was, as a young person, it was odd to me that you had this little British conclave, and I hadn't studied British history at that point, to the point where I knew about the Opium Wars and how the British attempted to continue to, well, they did, they continued to import British opium developed around the world to China. And somehow out of all of that corruption, we see this British Hong Kong develop. So we had our people work on the continued development of the YMCA around the world, and we were somehow drawn to start looking at how the YMCA emerged in China. And what we saw was also shocking. In 1895, Hong Kong, or the British, developed the YMCA in about a dozen cities in China, and it was equally well funded, as was the Salvation Army, and it was well funded by the same people, by the Rockefellers, by the Rothschilds, by Carnegie, and the like. And so in looking at the reports that were prepared for the various YMCA associations in China, starting in 1895, we came across in 1910 a report, no, it was 1920, a report from the Wuhan Association of the YMCA. And we stopped. We said, Wuhan, that's certainly contemporary. And then we discovered that at that time, Wuhan was a part of a three-city triumvirate. And this was the Wuhan YMCA Association that was getting money from the Rockefellers to build their association property in Wuhan. And in the process of reading through this document, it was just like, what? We looked at the document and it read more like a geopolitical diatribe from Harvard or Columbia or Oxford College. It did not read like a document that you would expect to see for a nonprofit association selling swimming fees and workout fees. And in looking at this document on page 14, they announced that the YMCA had started an organization called the Institute for Pacific Relations of, there I got, Institute of Pacific Relations. And we said, what's this? We've never heard of it. So we started looking at this organization and the fact that the Y was organizing it. And then what we discover, and I will bottom line this because there are many factors here. You mentioned Dumbarton Oaks. You mentioned the United Nations. This Institute of Pacific Relations was the organization that carried forward the vision of Cecil Rhodes and the Pilgrim Society in the International Press Conference, the first international press conference in London, and carried that agenda forward through World War I, World War II, and was the group that organized the agenda and the organization of the United Nations in 1946. This group, founded by the YMCA. I mean, it just blew us away that what we found in looking through the Institute of Pacific Relations' documents, in their own reports, they disclosed that British Chatham House was essentially running them and did run them through the United Nations formation and forward from there. Now, the reason we know a lot of this in detail is that in 1950 and 1951, we had some Patriot senators and congressmen who had developed hearings that went on for many years to disclose the activities of specifically the Institute of Pacific Relations. And they disclose that this institute was responsible not only for the development of Russian communism, Soviet communism, but also they put Mao in power through hiding behind the YMCA. So what we see here is this British Institute called Chatham House, which its original name was the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which had its office at Chatham House. That's how Chatham House became the abbreviation for the Royal Institute. What we see is that Royal Institute was one of the chief organizers of this Institute of Pacific Relations, and its leader was Sir Iveson Stevenson McAdam, a Scottish knight. And when you look into the background for this particular person, what you see is a member of the royal household since Edward VII, who was around for the first imperial press conference, and that he was the organizer of the royal house for all of the big events of our time, of our the last century, of the 21st century, which included all the royal parades, all of the royal jubilees from Edward VII forward through the current queen. He was the man who was the representative of the royal family within the development of the working out of the Rhodes vision for a one world government that would be run by Britain. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You can't mistake it. Our Congress in 1950, 51, 52 prepared some exquisite reports that nail the IPR as the organization that was running this world government plan out of Chatham House, Royal Institute for International Affairs, the monarchy.
So then McCarthyism wasn't wrong.
He was right. Completely right. He was demonized and made fun of. But it wasn't just McCarthy, because the Internet Institute for Pacific Relations had already been being investigated before McCarthy came along. So it looks like the whole McCarthyism propaganda was there, the attempt they needed to stop the movement within our Congress to stop this infiltration of communism. Because what we can see here is the Institute of Pacific Relations through the YMCA brought in Mao Zedong as a young person, got him involved in something that they called the mass education movement, which was the simplification of the Chinese character set from 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 characters into an alphabet that was driven by the communists in China through Mao Zedong, that became the Cultural Revolution in China. And it was all driven by England. I mean, this is what's blowing me, because I accepted, as I grew up, the modern notion of this clash of nations and this anti-communism in the US, and that the communists were bad. What I did not realize is that the British were driving that side of the story, and they were driving the other side of the story, the anti-communist side of the story, through our media. So we were getting whipsawed by our propaganda to make Russia bad, China bad, America good, Britain good, right? That's how we were taught. That's what we grew up thinking. And I took gospel groups into the Soviet Union. But what I didn't realize I was looking at when I was meeting communists, when I met we met communists, is we were meeting British people. And they were driving that side of the story. And then we went back to London, and they were driving that side of the story. And in Washington, that side of the story. So the British propaganda story that came out of the First International Press Conference in MI6 and MI5, the creation of MI6 and MI5 in 1909, was in full play the entire 20th century, and that every side of every war was created by British Chatham House. It makes me angry when I realize what we're really seeing here.
Well, it makes me feel ignorant when this information was dug up by the miners. Can you elaborate on the connection between Stalin and Mao and the Marxist intent for this Chinese literacy program to create a new proletariat in China?
Yes. Yeah. So it's evident now that what was going on is Chatham House couldn't say, hey, we're on both sides, so guys don't listen to us. So they chose to be on the American side of this story. So what they did with the emergence of Mao is Mao got all of his instructions from Moscow, from Stalin, from Lenin, And the IPR set up councils in Moscow, in Peking, in Washington, London, and about 8 or 9 other locations around the world. And the IPR became the focal point for all information coming out of London for Mao. And it was facilitated by Lenin, Stalin, and the Soviet Communist Party. So the Soviet Communist Party fed information to Mao, who was getting his instructions as the Russian communists were getting their instructions from London. So we were getting worked on both sides of this story, and the Americans were paying the bill.
And as our research has pointed out, what I call chaos Marxism basically is based upon exactly what Mao did. Mao had the first peasant armies. And what did he promise all of them? You get to kill your overlords. And that is basically the message of Marxism. It's the message of socialism, which always...
It's the settlement movement.
Yep. And it always then goes into communism, which then goes into dictatorial fascism. And so we can see that Stalin and Mao, Stalin's intent was to create industrialization in China so that the peasants could move into the cities, become industrialized, become a manufacturing nation, which they did, and then literally became the number one manufacturing nation in the world and basically took over manufacturing for America. 1.51% was done by the Chinese.
We don't want to jump over this. How did he do that? He used the YMCA to do it. That blows me away. So he used an organization that's got Christian in their name. But when you actually look at their document, you see how they finessed that whole part of their public relations. And in the document where we discovered the Institute for Public Pacific Relations, I can't even keep it straight. On the other pages, we see a description by the head of the YMCA in China where he does this word salad march, where he talks about the Christianity of Christ being different than the Christianity of Christendom. And so what he's doing is he's setting up Mao to be able to assume some mantle that has some word salad association with things Christian, because he needed to use the YMCA to organize this peasant. I mean, think about that. You're a peasant. You're living day to day. You don't have time to drop the rake that you're using to rake up your harvest and go off and march off and follow Mao. You know, that was all pure propaganda to make us think that the peasants didn't like Chiang Kai-shek, and that somehow they had all this time in the world and all these resources and all this ability to march off and be an army. No way. That was paid for by Carnegie, by Rockefeller, by the usual suspects for the British.
And in essence, the YMCA never really got much Christianity going in China. The Jesuits were there from the late 1500s, early 1600s. And in 300 years of being there, they developed a few hundred churches, but you know, only a few thousand followers, hundred thousands of followers, which is very minuscule in China. And then today we can see that President Xi basically is destroying all Christianity. All crosses have to come down. Every lecture, every sermon, the liturgy has to be completely approved by the Communist Central Committee. So Christianity really still to this very day does not have a foothold in China, but the foundings of Marxism, which created industrial proletariat, then became those who could create a revolution against the nationalists, Chiang Kai-shek, and overthrow them. And
yeah, it was another form. It was another form of the communitarianism of Ruskin. And the same kind of thing they were implementing with the Salvation Army, they were doing with the YMCA under the fake banner of Christianity. But in fact, it was the opposite. It was more ways to implement another form of communism, communitarianism, so that the lords of the manor could keep going. And the lords of the manor were in London, and they were instructing Lenin, Stalin, and the whole communist era in Russia. They were instructing the whole communist era in China, and they were using the IPR to reform the League of Nations as the United Nations. And the other aspect of this that the Congress did a really good job of documenting was how Harry Dexter White and Alger Hiss were taking the Institute of Pacific Relations, and they were taking control of the State Department's policy, which was going to be completely pro-communist. And that exists to this day.
And in Shanghai, the Shanghai Free Zone, and in Hong Kong, the British still had complete control of the economy of China. So if anyone doubts that to this very day, that's called the HSBC. And you have to be basically a Chinese communist to get the discount you get in the Shanghai Free Zone. And we have seen in the news what happens with the supposed British handing over of Hong Kong to the Chinese.
Well, let me point out, who was the chief counsel at HSBC other than James Comey, a future FBI director? So our government has been completely seized by this Chatham House IPR United Nations group associated with Cecil Rhodes. So now, and the Pilgrim Society, I need to mention, because that's the great behind-the-scenes controller behind Chatham House. So we've never been able to see this because the mechanisms of propaganda and the mechanisms of educational propaganda and the mechanisms of fellowships and funding of academia in America has been controlled by a small group of people, all associated with Chatham House, so that when you say, I feel bad because I never saw this, well, most of this data, as we're discovering, has been buried in archives that were only accessible if you actually went to the libraries and you asked to see the boxes of archives for that. Now, some of that's being automated, and that's how we were able to discover it.
And this is so relevant to our time because Wuhan in the news, of course, at their biological weapons lab, a P4 lab funded by Tony Fauci and the National Institute of Health, supposedly was the source of this coronavirus, the COVID-19. Well, we have proven and also demonstrated, not proven, but demonstrated that there were three releases of these viruses in China, not by the Chinese, but by the British. The British Purbright Institute, which has been basically creating biological weapons since its inception and now is one of the number one supporters of the pharmaceutical institutes throughout the world, pharmaceutical corporations, through the Wellcome Trust. So
Wellcome Trust, the largest NGO fund on the planet, second only, or Gates Foundation is number two, Wellcome Trust is number one. That's the Purbright Institute. That's Lord Henry de Worms, a Rothschild by his mother, and the primary sponsor since the late 1800s, 1880s, 1890s, of Henry Wellcome and his attempt and work to find a vaccine that would be the future army of the British Empire, a vaccine. They've been at this a lot.
Yes, and we had pointed out that Purbright, after they had created mad cow disease, and it bled over into humans and created spongiform encephalitis, that is exactly the illness that comes out of the coronavirus, COVID-19, and that it was released three times in Wuhan by the Brits through the Purbright Institute, the Muriel Animal Institute, and their new wing of their intelligence agency that is ran by Manningham Buller, Kinetic. So we have demonstrated that, and it's, you can time it. You can see exactly when they were released in three different ways, through water, through food, and through an aerosol. And the reason was because of Brexit. Brexit was going to take down Britain and make it no longer a major or most powerful economic player in the European Union. And so they tried Brexit, but what did Brexit do? They got a bad deal, and now they had to destroy China's supremacy for manufacturing and basically destroy the plan for China to be the supernation and knock America down and take us out of the battle and put us back into what's called the Clash of Nations, where nations have to fight with each other so that there's one supernation that is in control of them. And you may think that Henry Kissinger was right, saying it was China. No, it's the Brits controlling China.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing we've got to realize here, that all of this propaganda that we've been suffering from for years, Russia, 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 China, 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 are all fronts for the British agenda. And everything we see marches back to Chatham House, which marches back to the Pilgrim Society, and this one world government that the British have been attempting to develop, using communism as a punching bag in the West to create this antithesis between American freedom and the Soviet Union. But in fact, what we're seeing is it's all an attack on America by the British Empire to bring us back to the fold. And they've done a pretty good job, I'll have to say. And what we discovered in looking at our patent issues is that the U.S. Patent Office in 2006 was taken over by British Serco. Now, people don't believe that, but you can actually go see the press releases and see the documents. The Patent Office of the United States has been seized by the British. And that ticks me off as an inventor, that our government let this happen. But what we also see is that Serco, by its very name, and you can track the names back, was RCA. RCA in England, and it was run by General Electric. So when we actually start digging back through the documents, what we find is General Electric helped RCA and AT&T and Westinghouse helped RCA get started in 1919 by a declaration by an assistant deputy Navy secretary by the name of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And RCA then started using the technology of Marconi, or of Tesla, which they rebranded as Marconi Wireless. We start seeing the development of the propaganda side of this banking scheme. And that's why they had to always control technology. And that's how I got involved, because I invented social networking. So they stole the original telegraph inventions. They stole the original wireless inventions. They stole the inventions of social networking. Why? Because they had to control communication, because they could only get done what they wanted to get done with this global takeover if they controlled the ability of people to know what's going on.
Absolutely. And I'd like for you to address the fact that the British, through the British War Board, later turned into the people who we call Tavistock Institute. They took up the Frankfurt School's propaganda methods of which also undermine cultural development. And now the Tavistock Institute propaganda is standard for the British, and it's so effective that it's got them through two world wars that they created, and now a pharmaceutical World War III. And then you see the Chinese, they don't have the finesse to pull off President Xi's One Belt, One Road plan, which is basically that he's saying he that the Chinese Communist Party are hegemonists. They wish to have global world control underneath one person.
Yes, so, but it's not the Chinese, it's the British. That's exactly the thing we got to stop doing. We've got to stop talking about China. It's not about China. It's never been about China. And the folks in Britain love it when we talk about China. That's my view.
Yeah, that's what they're hiding behind. And you can see, you know, the Brits supposedly gave Hong Kong back to China, but in fact, they're still controlling the economic stock markets. They're still controlling the Shanghai.
Can I interrupt you? Because I think what we need to realize that when we were studying Mark Malik Brown, we discovered that Malik Brown is invested in numerous software companies that have developed all of the banking software in where? In China, in communist China. Now, why did they develop Hong Kong? Well, Hong Kong was a hub for the trade, for communications back in the day. They don't need Hong Kong anymore because they've got the software that runs the Chinese banks. So HSBC is running all the Chinese banks. So anything to do with China has everything to do with Britain. They are brilliant at what they've done.
Yes, so much so that our special relationship with Britain gives the five eyes, which four of those eyes are British, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and Britain. They have complete access to all of our intelligence. And as you've always pointed out, Serco and other British corporations run our Navy, which is where most of our intelligence comes from and is developed.
Can I stop you? Can I stop you on five eyes? Because what we got to realize is we've heard this term, the special relationship. I mean, I heard Pompeo talk about it the other day. In fact, he issued a big press release when he was secretary about it, Secretary of State. And what we got to realize that the term special relationship was first mentioned on March 5th of 1946 on the back of a train by Winston Churchill with Harry Truman standing next to him. And they talk about this new special relationship between Britain and America. Well, what they don't tell us and didn't tell us and we didn't know until 2010 is that the term special relationship came because we had just agreed in a super secret intelligence sharing agreement that America would share almost all of its intelligence with the British. From 1946. We gave up our sovereignty. Churchill knew that. Truman knew that. So they talk about this special relationship. Now, the other thing that we have to realize is that that was the same speech where Churchill talks about an Iron Curtain falling on Europe. Why? Because his royal contacts, especially Iveson McAdam, and the Institute of Pacific Relations were controlling the Soviet Union. So they could make the Soviet Union appear to be whatever they wanted it to be. Why? Because it drove money, it controlled Congress, and it controlled America and its intention to fund their plan for the IPR for the British to run the world. We got so worked. It's just annoying.
I like to say that special relationship is actually, we are the lapdog of Britain.
Exactly.
But we are the pit bull that they sick through false flags onto other nations to continue the clash of nations so that they can still be the superpower of the world. And that's the illusion. No one will ever tell you right now Britain's the superpower of the world, but they are. Because we've demonstrated it with our timelines, both through the banking system, through the social Christian social gospel system, and then through the political system, which we've outlined at the beginning of this broadcast as these timelines. And so what has been realized about the Institute for Pacific Relations and the Washington Conversations on International Peace and Security Organization, the secret chief, Iveson McAdam, those are the key factors. Those are the missing pieces of the puzzle. Those are the linchpins that hold it all together. So once again, we owe a tremendous debt to you and the miners who, you know, sometimes you really ought to let them come up out of the mines, you know, but I know they never do. They never do come up out of the mines. Matter of fact, they seldom see the light of day because they're down there in the darkness fighting with the forces of evil. And
that's
so I'll just close this broadcast by saying that I believe that our zeitgeist, the spirit of our times, which the Christians believe is the Archangel Michael, risen to the position of an archai, who is the leader for 360 years from 1879 into our times and into the future, there is a huge battle, a battle with powers, dominions, and principalities. These are fallen hierarchical beings who are working through people like Iveson McAdam, Lord Mark Malik Brown. And so you can see the politics was being handled by Alfred Milner. The banking was being handled by the Rothschilds and their agents, that the pharmaceutical companies were being handled by Lord Pirbright and the Pirbright Institute. And then the hidden secret that literally is not known by anyone. I've never read in a book anything that revealed what you were revealing today. So we have to thank you for that, because those are the missing pieces that tie it all together. And that's the reason in our conversation before this broadcast, I said, okay, then I'll make a timeline of the discoveries that have been made by the miners and yourself and by the Conclave and Betsy and her team. And that timeline is the most damnable prosecution of these evil forces that in fact are ruling our world at this time.